Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes episode, let's call it 326. My name is Chris Ovenbrino. With me, as always, is Jeff Hawkins. Jeff, how you doing?
Pretty good. The secondary shows this week were pretty much hot fire.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was completely glued to my television screen throughout all of NXT US. That was basically TV made for Chris Ovenbrino, and I'm pretty sure television made for Jeff Hawkins.
Especially the tag team stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That NXT US, that was all about it. But first, before we get into that, we've got the cleanup section. We've got a little bit of news to go over here. I know that you mentioned Tommaso Ciampa. I kind of want to start with that as well. I'm hearing that Tommaso Ciampa is, quote-unquote, on borrowed time.
Supposedly had neck surgery today. And I guess at the NXT tapings, they will be doing whatever fallout needs to be done about that. Could be out anywhere from 6 to 14 months, I believe, was the original estimate. Which puts, of course, everything that they'd done over the past few tapings and for the build to take over in Brooklyn out the window. If I'm WWE, I don't bring up Johnny Gargano now. I think... Yeah, gosh, because I don't have faith in them anyways. I
think you keep him down there and you put the belt on Johnny and yeah. You start telling some sort of news story with Johnny and weave in this injury angle as best you can. I don't think you can ever, of course, like tell the full Tommaso Johnny story that you were trying to tell initially here. But, yeah, I don't see any reason to rush him up, and I don't want him to end up like Oney Lorcan on 205 Live, although I think 205 Live is a good spot for Oney Lorcan. I think so much investment and time has been put into Johnny with a particular audience. You just should keep him there.
Yeah, probably. Give him the run, give him the redemption story. You know, there are other people on that roster that you could put the belt on. You know, and they're all... great candidates. There's a couple off the beaten path choices that I'd like to see get some consideration too. I'd love to see Tyler Breeze go down there and get a run with the title because they're not doing anything with him on the main roster. I think Fabian Aichner, fresh off this Evolve run, could be a single star, and especially given his performance in the tag team match this week.
There's something there. If you break up Aichner and Bartel, you will be breaking my heart and kicking it into the ground and making it a bloody, muddy mess. I don't want that to happen.
But look, you got plenty of guys on there that have held major titles in other federations. Adam Cole can do it. You know,
see, that to me is the answer. Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era sitting on top of the roost. That's a story that they have not told yet, and I think now is a time to do it. And like they've sort of been begging for some sort of title storyline, so this actually opens up that lane kind of perfectly for them.
Yeah, I'd go with one of them as opposed to say, even putting it on Velveteen Dream, I think might be a mistake.
Yeah, or if you're going to put it on a babyface, the first people I'd immediately have them dealing with is the Undisputed Era, and the Undisputed Era is in the chase. But I think sooner rather than later this year, the belt has to end up on a member of the Undisputeds. I'm assuming it would be Adam Cole, but it would be more interesting if it was Kyle
Roddy.
O'Reilly.
Yeah, Roddy.
Or Roddy. Kyle O'Reilly.
So, also in the news, it was announced by JR that his WWE contract has expired And he'll be looking into other options, with supposedly AEW being among them.
Will AEW let him pitch his barbecue sauce?
I don't want him anywhere near AEW. And look, this is going to come off as a burial of sorts. It probably is. Right now, JR is to wrestling fans probably what Gordon Solie was to me in that latter day WCW thing.
Oh, yeah, like around 1991 when he totally doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, JR has been living off of this.
There's so much goodwill from the Attitude Era that he has been able to ride on for the last 6 or 7 years when the commentary chops haven't been there to stick with your memory.
Let me even go even further. Not just the goodwill, but the feeling that he was done dirty by the WWE. Don't get me wrong. He was slightly, but he was a player in this game. Much like Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. JR was head of talent relations for this company. JR to me...
Which is a perilous position.
Let me get out a few other things first. Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone together, one of my favorite commentary teams ever. JR and the King did nothing for me. JR right now is that 6 o'clock anchor in a major market who's getting a little long in the tooth, but thinks he's a bedrock, he's a cultural icon in this city. That's to me what he was. And I think he had no business being anywhere near New Japan on Access. Kevin Kelly should have been the voice of New Japan that entire time. He proved in those big shows that he's lost quite a bit on his fastball. If I'm AEW, I'm going after a virtual unknown.
I thought the lack of homework was a real problem on those shows with Jim Ross. I don't think that he showed up ready to rock on any of those New Japan shows and thought he could kind of get in there, BJR, look at who's wrestling now, and get by. And he didn't know moves. He didn't know what to look for. He didn't know how to say names. It was a real mess.
Yes, and you know what? Also, he has some physical limitations going. The energy's not there.
Absolutely, sure, sure.
The energy's not there anymore. It's just, if I'm AEW, I want a person who's going to be associated with my brand, and I want someone nobody knows.
And I want someone who could theoretically be there for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yes.
And create a voice of continuity. Because if you're AEW, what you need to do is what TNA never did, and that is to have a 10-year plan, not of what is every single angle of ours going to be, but what is the continuity of this product going to look like? Because at some point, you're going to have an archive, and what you want out of this archive is a sense of production continuity. WWE has a real nice sense of that. You go into different eras, they have a little bit different flavor, but if you're watching stuff from 06, it looks like stuff from 08, which looks like stuff from 09, so on and so forth. With TNA, you're looking at different chunks of their catalog. Some stuff's lit one way, some stuff's lit another way. You got different commentators in, you got people coming out. It's NWA, TNA, it's TNA, it's Impact, it's all these different things. What AEW needs is a voice. They can't get Mauro Ranallo, but they need someone who can be that anchor that can be the through line. So that 10 years from now, when you're putting together, you know, who's your big star at TNA? Well, Cody Rhodes, when you're doing a Cody Rhodes package, you have that voice calling every major spot in Cody Rhodes' career throughout AEW.
Yeah, and if you hire Jim Ross,
he can't do that. He can't be that guy.
He's going to be a guy who...
Not for the next 15 years.
He's not going to leave until he decides he wants to leave, and he will undermine anybody trying to take his position, because that's what he did with Michael Cole. Now, I have a very off-the-beaten-path guy that I think they should consider, a friend of this show. I think Rob McCarron would make a heck of a voice, and I'll tell you why. Because he was a referee in the Indies, he knows wrestling, and he has a great baritone, he has a nice straight-laced look. Give a guy like that, you know, he's kind of the Rich Bikini of unknown, untapped talent, but there are plenty of other lower level sports announcers, and that's what I think you want. I think you want a sports type guy as opposed to someone who's trying to pop a crowd or get himself over. I think you want a more straight ahead kind of old school approach in that way. And I just, you know,
and then you need a light needler, someone who can needle the totally straight guy a little bit, but you don't, to your point, you don't need Jerry Lawler doing puppies in 1998.
Right. Right. But I, you know what? I think Excalibur is probably going to end up being the color guy on these broadcasts anyways. And he's, you know, he's funny enough and he's knowledgeable enough. I just, the thought of JR being the voice of AEW and the people who are pushing for that, who may or may not be journalists. I just think they need a fresh outlook as opposed to someone who may have goodwill. I mean, if you want to bring him in as a consultant, great. I have no problem with you hiring him to help train the guy. But he still thinks he's the man. And I just think that having that around is going to be more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, I completely concur. If they want to have him on as a booking consultant to get some of his ideas on what they're doing with booking patterns, that sort of thing, I get that. As an announcer, I'm completely against that. I think they need to be thinking more long term.
Now, you brought this up. I'm going to transition into 205 Live. Were you at all shocked that Oney Lorcan won the match against Humberto Carrillo?
I was a little bit. It makes sense that essentially what we're getting is kind of like the Drew Gulak storyline I was saying that I thought we were getting, I don't know, a couple few weeks ago now. But this is a bit of a surprise. Like, I didn't actually expect Oney Lorcan to win this and end up in the tournament. I guess this is going to be the vehicle for Gulak and Gallagher to kind of persuade Humberto Carrillo, your high-flying antics are what got you in trouble here, but Oney Lorcan kind of won the match on high-flying antics.
Yeah, I'm becoming more of a fan of his than I was on the indies.
No, he's like a light heavyweight Cesaro.
Yeah.
With better music.
I think 205 Live is the perfect spot for him if they ever decide to break up him and Birch. Though I love that team.
I say bring them both up. Can Birch pass as a 205er?
I would much rather he and Birch either stay on NXT or go to NXT UK as a team, as opposed to 205.
No, I agree with that. I mean, actually, they could also hop around.
Yeah, I believe Birch
was
in the...
Yeah, I think they could even hop around if they wanted to. So, you know, if Birch and Lorcan showed up every so often on 205 Live, it would give this card a little bit of freshness and give you guaranteed quality in whatever tag match you're staging. So I'm not adverse to them showing up every so often. It looks like Oney Lorcan's going to be more of a regular feature, though.
Yeah, and so you're kind of in my, you're more or less in my camp as well. In that it's a that in that this loss is more of a storytelling thing for Humberto Carrillo rather than a setback.
Yeah, because the loss was supposed to happen, in my opinion, a couple of weeks ago in that TJP match. So somewhere along the line in this story, Carrillo needs to lose so that Gulak and Gallagher can have a relevance to Carrillo in terms of tutelage and mentorship.
Yeah, no, I like that idea. And then we had a pretty good match with Cedric and Akira Tozawa. I'm
spirited is what I would typify this as. This is a very good match.
They're still kind of playing up the Cedric Alexander redemption angle, which I like. It was just, it's one of those things where it's funny because you asked before we went to air if Tozawa was on his way out.
Yeah, the way that Tozawa did that big hug at the end and got that huge round of applause made me think that maybe Tozawa was finishing up here with WWE. But I guess it's just more fuel to good guy Cedric Alexander and his redemption saga. So you may very well be right, and this belt may very well be ending up on Cedric Alexander here at WrestleMania. Although I still have my suspicions about Tony Nese.
I viewed the hug as more a kind of a callback to what the cruiserweight division was going to be, a lot of what the CWC was. A lot of what, you know, a lot of that Ring of Honor influence within the cruiserweight division. I didn't see it as anything grandiose like that. So
And then we also had Colby Carino getting a little spot here on 205 Live. He got obliterated by Mike Kanellis in a no contest. I just thought it was worth mentioning because it was the son of Steve Carino getting his first little appearance on 205 Live.
Oh, I think it's very my favorite thing is he went on Twitter and goes, you know, technically I'm undefeated now on 205 Live.
I like that he showed up with the bleach blonde hair, a la his dad.
I flew on a plane once with Steve Carino, and Steve Carino sat in front of me, and it was the night after a show in Philly. I was not I was taking a connecting flight from Philly back to L.A. And he had obviously had a show the night before, and he's leaning against the plane, and he's bleeding on the side of the plane as he's trying to get some sleep. I mean, this is the most wrestling story ever right now. Yeah, no, I liked Nisa's, to your point, I liked Nisa's little vignette on 205.
Yeah, we're still continuing to advance him, and, you know, as we've said before, Tony Nese and Cedric Alexander have the most intrigue on this roster, other than, of course, Buddy Murphy, but Buddy's already champion, so the spotlight is on the right places as this tournament progresses.
Yeah, we just need to fill out this roster a bit more, because there is no intrigue on it, because everybody's fighting the same people week
Everybody
after
week. Has fought each other so many times, and more importantly, they don't ever actually kind of have stakes or through lines into matches or callbacks to other matches, so that would keep things fresh. Hopefully, Lorcan and maybe Birch and maybe a couple of other people from NXT or wherever end up on this roster to spice things up.
So from there, we go across the pond to the United Kingdom. There is nothing more awkward than when they try and put in the NXT UK universe. I go, stop that. Just make it all part of the NXT universe.
Yeah, I'm completely on board with this. Shouldn't the NXT universe just extend across the planet, and it doesn't really matter which chapter of NXT you're in?
And Chris, the greatest team in all my life, got a vignette and a hype video.
That means you're going to win matches. They're going to win matches. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this.
My mid-card great team of the Wild Boar and the Primate. Yes.
And I think they may be, at least when they go up against the Grizzled Young Veterans, packaged and presented as faces. And they will be very, very fun when they're feuding against the Grizzled Young Veterans. They'll be super spirited.
I'm all about mid-card tag teams with character. I am, and I love this team, and I'm looking forward to them. I just, it's, they're interesting. That's all I need. I only need interesting people. I don't need you to be great, smooth, you know, workers.
No, interesting, especially after watching Joseph Connors and Liguero, that's all I'm asking for. It's all I'm asking for.
Joseph Connors, look, if you want to hear a burial of Joseph Connors, go talk to Joe Lanza, because Joe Lanza will bury the hell out of him. I find him dreadful and boring.
He's just there for me. He is just a guy, and he's capable, and that's fine, but neither one of these two guys does anything for me. I think that Liguero, when he speaks with that mask on, because of the way the mask is framed, it has no like hole around his mouth, it makes him look like an idiot a little bit. It doesn't quite sit on his face the right way, so just the whole thing looks a little bit silly.
Well, you can hear the noise. You can hear the noise in his voice reverberate off the mask.
Yep, and the horns are a little too large, and it's just, the whole thing's a little goofy for me. I don't care for either one of these two guys at all, and I found their match to be okay. And that's really, I think, the most I'm ever going to feel about either one of these two.
Yeah, they tried to make Connors into something by turning on, you know, tag team partners.
But then they gave up on that angle, and it didn't mean anything. Because one of the people he turned on was James Drake.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually makes him look even more stupid, right? You turn on a guy who's now a tag team champion.
Giving him a winning streak is just a waste of time, to be honest, for me.
I love the torturing of Stoker and Howley by Eichner and Bartel. Like, this is great.
I liked that. I thought that they gave what are the names? Stoker and Howley.
Yeah.
Stoker and Howley. I almost call them Stokely Hathaway. Stoker and Howley. I think they gave them one too many hope spots. There was the
really?
One
I just thought they were kind of like ragdolls for most of the match. It went on a little too long. I'm definitely with you on this, but I thought that like this was just kind of a demolition derby for most of the match. Minus that one little spot where one of them fired up and hit both the guys. But even then, he was only fired up for like, I don't know, 10 seconds before he was cut back down.
Yes, but in my arsenal, I do like heels who lift guys up before the three count to instill more pain. I think that's a... that's a very good little heel move to do. But yeah, no, they were great here.
Yeah, no, this was very solid. Nina Samuels and Charlie Morgan, this kind of went by the numbers for me. Did you have anything to add on the Nina Samuels stuff?
No, she's to me going to be the placeholder before they get to a Ginny feud because they've run that so many times.
Right, no, I think she is going to have a match with Toni Storm sometime soon here. Toni's going to beat Nina Samuels after a little bit of resistance, and then she's going to have her Ginny feud.
Yeah,
which
because
is kind
right
of the
now,
tease we got in the promo, too.
Yeah, because right now their options are Rhea Ripley or Ginny. Rhea Ripley or Ginny. So you need someone else in there, and that's what Nina Samuels is going to do.
And then we had our Falls Count Anywhere match with Jordan Devlin and Travis Banks. I think you're a little higher on this than I am. I'll give my thoughts on it real quickly. I loved the way this match opened up. I just thought that once Travis Banks went for the high cross body from, I don't know, the elevated platform in the audience, let's call it, after that, it was a little bit downhill, and going back to the ring felt a little anticlimactic. I would have started the match in the ring a little bit, then spilled it to the outside.
Yeah, and that's the problem with Falls Count Anywhere matches is that there's a heart there are ways to get there naturally where you're going through the audience but they never really in the WWE style it doesn't get there. I'm not as high as you think I am on it, but Jordan Devlin has built a lot of goodwill with me over the past few weeks, especially for that promo with David Starr in anticipation of that match over in, I think it was WXW, I want to say. Don't kill me if I'm wrong on that, guys.
Devlin's just got a thing about him. He has it. He's intense.
Travis Banks is a guy I root for, but Travis Banks to me was always more interesting in a tag team. Like when he was with the South Pacific Power Trip, I loved that group, but they tried to make him a champion and evolve, but they tried to make him like an undersized Daniel Bryan style heel champion. It didn't quite work every time because he'd always underdog heel champions. There's a disconnect in the audience with that. But I mean, I thought he was good here. I didn't think it was great. And he took the loss here, which surprised me because I thought after all the times he got jumped by Jordan Devlin, he was finally going to get a win over him. But
this has all been a rebuild for Jordan Devlin ever since taking that loss to Pete Dunne several weeks ago now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think
I'm fine with
also,
that. I'm actually fine with that.
Yeah, and also the loss to Finn at the TakeOver was part of that story, too. So I guess, you know, you give him the high-profile losses, and then you build him up against other people. I'm good with that. I think Devlin's a good guy for them to keep around, and he's a flashy heel, which is always a good thing when you have a charismatic kind of cocksure heel around. You can always heat him up at any time to play him up against the more serious babyface like a Pete Dunne.
And at a certain point, you may want a change of pace champion. I mean, we're only assuming here that Walter will at some point end up as NXT UK champion. I'm not sure when, but I feel like that's coming up. After that, you might want a smaller, faster, flashier heel champion at some point down the road, and Devlin very much fits that mold.
I don't think he's ever going to be champion. I think he's that guy that's going to be like the second heel, though. He can be that secondary heel.
Yes.
He has a little Tully Blanchard, Roddy Strong in him in terms of the cocksureness, where he's the guy with the chip on his shoulder, but he's not the main heel.
That's true. He could also end up in a faction, too. Like, it's not impossible that he ends up in Gallus at some point.
Oh, God, no. Don't do
I should hope not. Yeah, I should hope not. But, I mean, they are sort of based on that British Isles vibe, right?
Yeah, well, he's Irish, so we don't want to. There might be some territorial wars within Gallus over that.
Well, isn't half of Gallus Irish? Like, aren't the Coffees Irish?
Oh man, God, we're gonna tick off our UK listeners if I get this wrong. So I'm just not going to go in there, and I'll have them correct me.
Okay, that's fine. I will suffer the slings and arrows of spurious online criticism. Let's move over to NXT US, where we
Chris, I'm gonna let you walk that plank alone, sir.
Thanks, Jeff. Always looking out for old Chris, old Novi. They're screwing your boy. So moving over to NXT US, this is the first week of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. This is as close to Wrestling Heaven as G1 is for me. I get really excited for these type of shows, and this opening match here of Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel was excellent. The initial near fall spot that Bartel and Aichner had, where Bartel does a suicide dive to the outside as Aichner is doing a corner-to-corner springboard moonsault, was outstanding. I thought both teams showed a ton of fire. I loved at the end of the match when Aichner is firing up on Aleister Black and sort of does this thing. This might not mean anything to you, but if you've ever played Halo, when you start kind of like nearly killing an elite in Halo, they kind of go into this like berserker mode thing right before they die. And that's exactly what Aichner kind of did. He, you know, it's like, ah, and then he got hit in the face with the black mass and went down like a rock. And this match just had me from beginning to end.
I would have really liked this match a lot more if I hadn't seen the Bartel Aichner squash right before it on NXT UK.
See, I watched this in opposite orders. So this is the first thing I saw this week.
It was a very smooth match. It was a very exciting match. It was basically an indie match. I loved the ending of this. I loved the fact that Bartel was trying to fire up for one last shot and just gets hit out of nowhere with black mass. I thought that was very good, as opposed
to... No, it was Aichner who gets hit with
Aichner,
mass.
My fault.
And Bartel gets wiped out on the outside. Aichner sees that, and that's what sends him into berserker mode.
But the snap kick out of nowhere, as opposed to really setting it up, I liked that. I like having natural endings like that, even if it is on a finisher, rather than...
Well, this keeps Aichner and Bartel looking strong because, like, Black just barely got that, and they just barely got out of there with the win, is the vibe that you get off of that.
Yeah, and I like that ending a little bit more than, say, like, the DIY, the name of their finisher, whatever it is, but, you know, it requires a guy to be on their knees for a while they do the gestures, and then they go and do it. I just think the snap kick, 1, 2, 3, really like that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. After that, we get a package of Dominik Dijakovic and Keith Lee going to a double countout, and we go to the training center where Dijakovic is training our boy from a couple of weeks ago. What was his name?
Oh, Bugenhagen.
Yeah, Bugenhagen. Bugenhagen's getting some pointers from Keith Lee and Danny Burch, and Dijakovic comes in and starts like kind of forcing his way to the ring. He's like, we can have this match right now. We can have this match right now. And then we get told after that that a rematch is going to be booked from 2 weeks from now, which I like. You know, hey, I like something to look forward to. And I like that NXT does this because, for example, main roster WWE television very rarely gives us something 2 weeks out.
Yeah. It was fine. It's...
I'm not like, you know, hose me or anything like that, but I thought that this was effective.
It's NXT high school, you know. I'll see you by the lockers at lunch today, you know, that kind of thing. And they do that okay sometimes. This one felt a little bit. It's like, well, if they're in the training center every day, they could probably do this every day then.
Then we go to Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch versus the Forgotten Sons. Forgotten no more, Jeff. This time represented by Wesley Blake and Steve Cutler. Jackson Riker hangs out on the outside. I was not as hot on this match as I was on our opener, but that's because the Forgotten Sons still don't do a lot for me. I will say this in their defense. This was one of the stronger Forgotten Sons showings. It might be their best match to date. That said, their best match is still not something I get super excited about.
I would agree that this is one of the better Forgotten Sons outings that we've had. I thought there was a lot smart about this match, but the thing that made it smart also took me a bit out of the ending. And,
the back
and I'll
stuff?
Tell you what it was. Yeah. I think not enough is done in tag team wrestling about how worn down a partner is and the quick tag things and affecting it. I thought that part was very smart. The problem I had was Lorcan's working his back, getting, you know, selling his back for most of the second half of that match. And then he starts running full speed and they tried to play it off as adrenaline. And then all of a sudden his back hurts again. I'm just like, it's my problem with indie wrestling in that.
The
in
tag sequencing
matches,
was kind of weird there too. Like they got it around to make some sense, but it felt very weird when Birch went to tag Lorcan.
Guy should not be running full speed after getting worn down. That's my always been my issue with modern indie style. I liked that he was kind of laying on the when he was laying on the apron and Birch looks at him and realizes I got to do this by myself for a while. While he rests up. I think that part, very, very smart. It's just that last kind of sequence that led to the pin. I kind of went, okay. That's a little too indie-rific for me. But overall, the Forgotten Sons are going to be what they are. They need to be more of a kick punch brawling team. And
you need to have Riker more involved. Their matches need to be more on the outside, utilizing the scenery and the furniture in legal ways, but barely legal ways. They need to be more ruthless. And
you know what they need to be? They need to be more of what their characters are supposedly. You know, they need to wrestle like bikers.
Right, right. Dirty bikers. Scuzzy bikers who are not here to fight fair. They're here to take names and make a statement.
The way you make a statement
is to leave your opponents kind of like a mess at the end of the match.
I don't want to see smooth move and great choreography from dirty bikers.
Yeah, all the synchronized moves and stuff. Yeah.
No. I don't want to see that.
No. Next, we get the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford versus Mustache Mountain, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven. This was a good match. I am still a little confused what we're doing with the Street Profits. Not as confused as they are about which corner they're supposed to be in during the match.
You picked up on that too, huh?
Allowing
the legal tag from the wrong corner. I saw that. I went, huh? Okay.
So we're on other sides now. Okay.
Well, they didn't even bring it up on commentary, which shocked me quite a bit. I'll tell you what this was, and I think a lot of this had to do with the fact that they had to put two babyface teams together and then two heel teams together in the Undisputed Era and DIY because of their plans.
Although DIY, you can kind of make them function as a fan favorite because the brand DIY does that, which is why they did that entrance, I think.
Oddly enough, I was watching this and I was thinking the entire time, I really liked the Street Profits style in this because all they were doing was punching and kicking.
Yeah.
And they were trying to wear it. I mean, they were playing the heels here quite a bit to Mustache Mountain, but they weren't doing a whole lot of, you know, they had the dives at the end and that was fine, but they earned them by building them up by just basic punches and kicks. And I especially like that sequence with Seven and Montez Ford, where Montez is just kicking the crap out of Trent Seven. I really liked that a lot because that plays to kind of my
be really
old
good
school.
If they ever turn them heel. I think that the Street Profits have a ton of mileage as heel team.
Yeah, and it's kind of a disconnect in how they present them because they present them as all sizzle.
Yeah, but especially in order to, I think, have the best match possible with the War Raiders, I think they need to be heels, and I think they need to be ruthless. And the Montez Ford in the balaclava, it's on this very, very razor-thin edge, but I kind of like the whole I'm here to steal the show, or I'm here to not steal the show, I'm here to steal a win, was actually the way it was presented on commentary, and that's very different. I'm into stealing the win.
Yeah, and Mustache Mountain's great. I mean, it looked to me also.
I mean, what can be said about those two? I think Trent Seven, as you said before, is a fantastic babyface in peril. And Tyler Bate's awesome. He's really, really good.
It looked to me like they were trying to keep the match simple, though, for the Street Profits, and because they had never worked together before. And so they're just kind of keeping it basic for them in terms of what they were getting in terms of offense. There weren't a lot of convoluted set pieces here. There were just enough double team moves to get by. But no, I enjoyed this quite a bit, but I agree with you. I don't know what they're doing with the Street Profits. I thought that they were going to put the rocket to them at the beginning of the year and really make them into contenders and then finally put them on a takeover and have them really try and do something special, because I thought that was the whole point of the Evolve excursion.
Yeah, and we're still very much in a holding pattern. Maybe now NXT's hand will be forced a little bit and they'll have to do something with them. We'll see. The Undisputed Era, represented by Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, Red Dragon, for those of you old-timers, versus DIY, Tommaso Ciampa, and Johnny Gargano. And this match begins with Tommaso and Johnny coming out, and as Tommaso comes out after Johnny does, he comes out to his theme song that people don't like, and then he kind of stops, and he points up to the screen, and then we start playing the DIY theme song, and the crowd, of course, goes crazy, and now we've effectively baby-faced this team of Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, although, of course, the audience is waiting for some sort of shoe to drop, and that kind of plays into the structure of this match, where Johnny Gargano is in peril, which feeds into the audience's skepticism that Tommaso Ciampa is really in it to be a good teammate, but then Ciampa gets tagged in, and Ciampa is great and really intense, although still very much wrestling as a heel. He's not like a playing for applause or anything like that, and he's doing a lot of still very kind of like stiff moves done in a very heel style. I thought that Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly were outstanding here on the tail end of this match. All of the tandem stuff that they do always looks great, and they were really good there. Fish looked a little slow to begin the match, though, to me.
I watched this in an entirely different state of mind than you did, I think. I watched this, and I was paying more attention to the way the commentary was talking about the Undisputed Era and the interactions between Fish and O'Reilly. And I thought they were dropping hints that Bobby Fish may be on his way out of the Undisputed Era. Because they were talking about how this was the team that, quote-unquote, won the Dusty Classic last year, and it wasn't Fish and O'Reilly. That was Cole and O'Reilly with the assist from Roderick Strong. And then they had those moments where, you know, Bobby Fish was in the wrong place a couple times, where Kyle O'Reilly was kind of telling him, Bobby, get in here to help a bit. It felt a little bit like they were dropping hints here. Now, I don't know if they are, but if they were, they're going to play the long game here and then point back to these types of things as a reason. That said, in the ending stretch of this match, when they said, you know, Dusty's probably looking down and smiling, and my snark came in and goes, Dusty's probably looking down and going, Kyle, that those bounces off the ropes were ridiculous looking, but I was entertained by them. when he does the bounce back through the ropes and then back in with the lariat and then under the between the second and the bottom rope and back, I howled because comedic Kyle O'Reilly is so great. But you didn't get a lot of that on the indies other than sleazy Kyle in PWG. And now he's just this goofball in some ways while also being an ass kicker, and I love him to death.
Yeah, no, I love Kyle O'Reilly. I can't get enough of this guy. And this would be, he's also a dark horse contender to me to be champion. I think the odds of that are pretty low, but like if you told me Kyle O'Reilly was the NXT champion, that wouldn't strike me as far-fetched, and I know I'd be getting good matches.
Nobody gets their butts kicked like Kyle O'Reilly, and nobody sells quite like Kyle O'Reilly can. He always
and when he's intense, he's really intense. He does a really good job like selling that intensity.
And you know what that does is that helps is the comedy, because like you remember that time it was the triple threat with the AOP and I think DIY, where he gets like, he's all intense and he gets back suplex and he gets up intense, no selling it, and then just falls out of the ring all of a sudden. That's what makes his punch drunk comedy so good, is the intensity he does to build up the credibility beforehand.
Yeah, no, it's the range. It's the loud and the soft. It's having those different dynamics to play off of so that the loud parts seem louder and the soft parts seem softer.
So we've wrapped up those shows. Is there any... We also had the Velveteen Dream...
getting Matt challenged Riddle. By Matt Riddle.
That's interesting.
It's quick. I did not expect this quick of a turnaround. And it makes me wonder if maybe Velveteen Dream is going to be a transitional champion and might lose this belt relatively quickly and get called up to the main roster.
I'm starting to think he's getting in on the post WrestleMania call up
train. Yeah, I think so too. One of these two competitors will be moving on.
Yeah, especially since Lars Sullivan has been nowhere to be seen. Any changes to Fastlane predictions that you want to make?
Not that I can think of.
I want to backtrack on my Ricochet possibly getting the black mass kick to cause a loss of some way.
I don't think that's happening.
It's not happening probably because I think the Ricochet Aleister Black team is going to have a bit of a run here. So
now you're on board with me. Yeah, I think that's what's happening. I think we're going to run with this team for a minute. They're hot. They've got good, easy match booking patterns with good, easy finishes to go to. You either go for the flashy 630 senton, or you have the sudden, out-of-nowhere black mass. Gives you a lot of different outs. They're a good team.
Want to thank those of you who have subscribed to the Patreon, patreon.com/shakethemropes.
And all of the positive feedback we've gotten for the Andy Kaufman episode. That we do hard work going into like those type of episodes, and to get positive feedback on that is really awesome. And so I just want to say thank you.
I've received some good feedback on the Great American Bash 1985 episode. People seem to enjoy our live watch of that. So for as little as $1 a month, you can go over and get all five of our premium episodes over there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at Chris Novembrino. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Chris, hit them up with your other projects.
My other show is called Don't Worry About the Government. You can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher, and I think Spotify. I need to double check that, but I always say iTunes and Stitcher. I think you can also do it on Spotify. Search for Don't Worry About the Government. Man, my other show is called The All in the Family Podcast. We dropped an episode of that this week, which you can check out at allinthefamilypodcast.com or by subscribing on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks.
We'll be back on Tuesday reviewing Fastlane and the Raw and SmackDown Fallout afterwards.
So much wrestling. We'll see you then.
So much wrestling.
There is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now. Save.